Osho, Tao, the Three Treasures, Volume 1, Talks on Fragments from Lao Tzu's Tao Te Ching, given at the Osho Commune International, Pune, India. Discourse number 1.
Bhagwan, Lao Tzu says on the absolute Tao, the Tao that can be told of is not the absolute Tao. And on the rise of relative opposites, he says, when the people of the earth all know beauty as beauty, there arises the recognition of ugliness. When the people of the earth all know the good as good, there arises the recognition of evil. Therefore, being and non-being interdepend in growth. Difficult and easy interdepend in completion. Long and short interdepend in contrast. High and low interdepend in position. Tones and voice interdepend in harmony. Front and behind interdepend in company. Therefore the sage manages affairs without action, preaches the doctrine without words. All things take their rise, but he does not turn away from them. He gives them life, but he does not take possession of them. He acts, but he does not appropriate, accomplishes, but claims no credit. It is because he lays no claim to credit that the credit cannot be taken away from him.
I speak on Mahavir as a part of my duty. My heart is never with him. He is too mathematical. He is not a mystic. He has no poetry of being. He is great, enlightened, but like a vast desert. You cannot come across a single oasis in him. But because I am born a Jain, I have to pay some debts. I speak on him as my duty, but my heart is not there. I speak only from the mind. When I speak on Mahavir, I speak as an outsider. He is not inside me and I am not inside him. The same is true about Moses and Muhammad. I don't feel like speaking on them. I have not spoken on them. If I was not born a Jain, I would have never spoken on Mahavir either. Many times, my Mohammedan disciples or my Jewish disciples come to me and they say, why you don't speak on Muhammad or Moses? Difficult to explain to them. Many times, just looking at their faces, I decide that I will speak. Many times, I look again and again into the words of Moses and Muhammad. Then I again postpone it. No bell rings in my heart. It will not be alive. If I speak, it will be a dead thing. Even I don't feel a duty towards them as I feel a duty towards Mahavir. But they all belong to the same category. They are too calculative. Extremists. They miss the opposite extreme. They are single notes, not harmonies, not symphonies. A single note has its beauty, the austere beauty, but it is monotonous. Once a while it is okay, but if it continues, you feel bored. You would like to stop it. The personality of Mahavir, Moses and Muhammad is like a single note, simple, austere, beautiful even once a while. If I meet Mahavir, Moses or Muhammad on the road, I will pay my respects and escape. I speak on Krishna. He is multidimensional, superhuman, miraculous, but looks more like a myth than a real man. So extraordinary that he cannot be. On this earth, such extraordinary persons cannot exist. They exist only as dreams. And myths are nothing but collective dreams. The whole humanity has been dreaming them. Beautiful, but unbelievable. I talk about Krishna, I enjoy. But I enjoy it as one enjoys a beautiful story and the telling of a beautiful story. But not very meaningful. A cosmic gossip. I speak on Jesus Christ. I feel deep sympathy for him. I would like to suffer with him. And I would like to carry his cross a little while by his side. But we remain parallel. We never meet. He is so sad, so burdened with the miseries of whole humanity. He cannot laugh. If you move with him too long, you will become sad. You will lose laughter. A gloominess surrounds him. I feel for him, but I would not like to be like him. I can walk with him a little while and share his burden, but then we depart. Our ways go different ways. He is good. But too good, almost inhumanly good. I speak on Zarathustra very rarely, but I love the man as a friend loves another friend. You can laugh with him. He is not a moralist, not a Puritan. He can enjoy life and everything that life gives. A good friend, you can be with him forever, but just a friend. Friendship is good, but not enough. I speak on Buddha. I love him. Through the centuries down, through many lives, I have loved him. He's tremendously beautiful. Extraordinarily beautiful. Superb. But he's not on the earth. He does not walk on the earth. He flies in the sky and leaves no footprints. You cannot follow him. You never know his whereabouts. He is like a cloud. Sometimes you meet him, but that is accidental. And he is so refined that he cannot take roots on this earth. He is meant for some higher heaven. In that way, he is one-sided. Earth and heaven don't meet in him. He is heavenly, but the earthly part is missing. He is like a flame, beautiful, but there is no oil. The container. Once you can see the flame, but it is going higher and higher. Nothing holds it on the earth. I love him. I speak on him from my heart, but still, a distance remains. It always remains in the phenomena of love. You come close and close and close, but even in closeness, there is a distance. That is the misery of all lovers. I speak on Lao Tse totally differently. I am not related to him, because even to be related, a distance is needed. I don't love him, because how can you love yourself? When I speak on Lao Tse, I speak as if I am speaking on my own self. With him my being is totally one. When I speak on Lao Tse, it is as if I am looking in a mirror. My own face is reflected. When I speak on Lao Tse, I am absolutely with him. Even that is not true, to say that absolutely with him. I am him. He is me. Historians are doubtful about his existence. I cannot doubt his existence, because how can I doubt my own existence? The moment I became possible, he became true to me. Even if history proves that he never existed, it makes no difference to me. He must have existed, because I exist. I am the proof. So it is not when I will be speaking on Lao Tse these days that I speak on somebody else. I speak on myself. as if Lao Tse is speaking through a different name, a different Namarup, a different incarnation. Lao Tse is not like Mahavir, not mathematical at all, yet very, very logical in his madness. He has a mad logic. When we will penetrate into his sayings, you will come to feel it. It is not so obvious and apparent. He has a logic of its own. The logic of absurdity, the logic of paradox, the logic of a madman. He hits hard. Mahavir's logic can be understood even by a blind man. To understand Lao Tse's logic, you will have to create eyes. It is very subtle. It is not the ordinary logic of the logicians. It is the logic of a hidden life, a very subtle life. Whatsoever he says is on the surface absurd. Deep down, there lives a very great consistency. One has to penetrate it. One has to change his own mind to understand Lao Tse. Mahavir, you can understand without changing your mind at all. As you are, you can understand Mahavir. He is on the same line. Howsoever ahead of you, he may have reached the goal, but he is on the same line, the same track. When you try to understand Lao Tse, he is zigzag. Sometimes you see him going towards the east and sometimes towards the west, because he says east is west, west is east. They are together. They are one. He believes in the unity of the opposites. And that is how life is. So Lao Tse is just a spokesman of life. If life is absurd, Lao Tse is absurd. If life has absurd logic in it, Lao Tse has the same logic in it. Lao Tse simply reflects life. He doesn't add anything to it. He doesn't choose out of it. He simply accepts whatsoever it is. It is simple to see the spirituality of a Buddha. Very simple. It is impossible to miss it. He is so extraordinary. But it is difficult to see the spirituality of Lao Tse. He is so ordinary. Just like you. You will have to grow in understanding. A Buddha passes by you, you will immediately recognize a superior human being has passed you. He carries the glamour of a superior human being around him. It is difficult to miss him, almost impossible to miss him. But Lao Tse, he may be your neighbor. You may have been missing him. He is so ordinary. He is so extraordinarily ordinary. And that is the beauty of it. To become extraordinary is simple. Just effort is needed. A refinement is needed. Cultivation is needed. It is a deep inner discipline. You can become very, very refined, something absolutely unearthly. But to be ordinary is really the most extraordinary thing. No effort will help. Effortlessness is needed. No practice will help. No methods, no means will be of any help. Only understanding. Even meditation will not be of any help. To become a Buddha, meditation will be of help. To become a Laozi, even meditation won't help. Just understanding life as it is and living it with courage, not escaping from it, not hiding from it, facing it with courage, whatsoever it is, good or bad, divine or evil, heaven or hell. It is very difficult to be a Laozi or to recognize a Laozi. In fact, if you can recognize a Laozi, you are already a Laozi. To recognize a Buddha, you need not be a Buddha. But to recognize Laozi, you need to be a Laozi, otherwise it is impossible. It is said that Confucius went to see Laozi. Laozi was an old man. Confucius was younger. Laozi was almost unknown, and Confucius was almost universally known. Kings and emperors used to call him to the courts. Wise men used to come for his advice. He was the wisest man in China in those days. But by and by, he must have felt that his wisdom may be of use for others. But he is not blissful. He has not attained to anything. He has become an expert. Maybe helpful to others, but not helpful to himself. So he started a secret search to find someone who can help him. Ordinary wise men won't do, because they used to come for his own advice. Great scholars won't do. They used to come to ask him about their problems. But there must be someone somewhere. Life is vast. He tried a secret search. He sent his disciples to find out someone who can be of help to him, and they came with the information that there lives a man. Nobody knows his name. He is known as the old guy. Laozi means the old guy. The word is not his name. Nobody knows his name. He was such an unknown man. Nobody knows when he was born. Nobody knows to whom. Who was his father? Who was his mother? Because nobody knew. And he had lived for 90 years. And only very rare human beings had come across him. Very rare. Who had different eyes and perspectives to understand him. He was only for rarest, so ordinary a man, but only for rarest human minds. Confucius, hearing this news that there exists a man known as the old guy, went. When he met Laozi, he could feel he was a man of great understanding, great intellectual integrity, great logical acumen, a genius. He could feel something is there, but he couldn't catch hold of it. Vaguely, mysteriously, there was something. This man was no ordinary man, but looked absolutely ordinary. Something hidden. He What do you say about morality? What do you say how to cultivate good character? Because he was a moralist. And he thought that if you cultivate a good character, that is the highest attainment. Lhasa laughed loudly. And he said, if you are immoral, only then the question of morality arises. And if you don't have any character, only then you think about character. A man of character is absolutely oblivious of the fact that anything like character exists. A man of morality does not know what the word moral means. So don't be foolish. And don't try to cultivate. Just be natural. And the man had such tremendous energy that Confucius started trembling. He couldn't stand him. He escaped. He became afraid, as one becomes afraid near an abyss. When he came back to his disciples who was waiting outside under a tree, the disciples could not believe, because this man has been going to the emperors, greatest emperors, and they have never seen any nervousness, and he was trembling and cold perspiration was coming, pouring out from all over his body. They couldn't believe what has happened, what this man Lhasa has done to their teacher. They asked, he said, wait a little, let me collect myself, this man is dangerous. And about Lhasa he said to his disciples that I have heard about great animals like elephants, and I know how they walk, and I have heard about hidden animals in the sea, and I know how they swim, and I have heard about great birds who fly thousands of miles away from the earth, and I know how they fly, but this man is a dragon. Nobody knows how he walks. Nobody knows how he lives. Nobody knows how he flies. Never go near him. He is like an abyss. He is like a death. And that is the definition of a master. A master is like death. If you come near him too much close, you will feel afraid. A trembling will take over. You will be possessed by an unknown fear, as if you are going to die. It is said Confucius never came again to see this old man. He was ordinary in a way. And in another way, the most extraordinary man. He was not extraordinary like Buddha. He was extraordinary in a totally different way. His extraordinariness was not so obvious. It was a hidden treasure. He was not miraculous like Krishna. He has not done any miracle. But his whole being was a miracle. The way he walked, the way he looked, the way he was. His whole being was a miracle. He was not sad like Jesus. He could laugh. He could laugh a belly laugh. It is said that he was born laughing. Children are born crying, weeping. It is said about him that he was born laughing. I also feel it must be true. A man like Lhasa must be born laughing. He is not said like Jesus. He can laugh and laugh tremendously. But deep down in his laughter, there is a sadness, a compassion, a sadness about you, about the whole existence. His laughter is not superficial. Zarathustra laughs, but his laughter is different. There is no sadness in it. Laughs is said like Jesus and not said like Jesus. Laughs laughs like Zarathustra and doesn't laugh like Zarathustra. His sadness has a laughter to it, and his laughter has a sadness to it. He is a meeting of the opposites. He is a harmony, a symphony. Remember this. I am not commenting on him. There exists no distance between me and him. He is talking to you through me. A different body, a different name, a different incarnation, but the same spirit. Now we will take the sutra. The Tao that can be told off is not the absolute Tao. Let me first tell you the story how these sutras came to be written, because they will help to understand them. For 90 years Lao Tzu lived. In fact, he did nothing except living. He lived totally. Many times his disciples asked to write, but he will always say the Tao that can be told is not the real Tao. The truth that can be told becomes untrue immediately. So he will not say anything. He will not write anything. Then what the disciples were doing with him? They were only being with him. That's what satsanga is. Being with him. They lived with him. They moved with him. They simply imbibed his being. Being near him, they tried to be open to him. Being near him, they tried not to think about anything. Being near him, they became more and more silent. In that silence, he will reach them. He will come to them. He will knock at their doors. For 90 years he refused to write anything or to say anything. This is his basic attitude. The truth cannot be told, and truth cannot be taught. The moment you say something about truth, it is no more true. The very saying falsifies it. You cannot teach it. At the most, you can indicate it. And that indication should be your very being, your whole life. It cannot be indicated by words. He was against words. He was against language. It is said that he used to go for a morning walk every day. A neighbor used to follow him, knowing well that he doesn't want to talk, a man of absolute silence. The neighbor always kept silent. Even a hello was not allowed. Even to talk about the weather was not allowed. To say that how beautiful a morning will be too much of a chattering. For miles Lao Tse will go for a long walk and the neighbor will follow him for years. Once it happened, a guest was staying with the neighbor and he also wanted to come. And the neighbor brought him. He did not know Lao Tse or his ways. He started feeling suffocated because his host was not talking, this Lao Tse was not talking, and he couldn't understand why they are so silent. And the silence became heavy on him. If you don't know to be silent, it becomes heavy. It is not that by saying things you communicate. No, it is by saying things you unburden yourself. In fact, through words communication is not possible. Just the opposite is possible. You can avoid communication. You can talk and you can create a screen of words around you and your real situation cannot be known by others. You clothe yourself through words. That man started feeling naked and suffocated and awkward. It was embarrassing. So he simply said, when the sun was rising, he said, "What a beautiful sun. Look. What a beautiful sun is born, rising. What a beautiful morning." That's all he said. But nobody responded because the neighbor, the host knew that Lao Tse won't like it. And of course Lao Tse won't say anything, won't respond. When they had come back, Lao Tse told to the neighbor that from tomorrow, don't bring this man. He is a chatterbox. And he had only said only this much, that what a beautiful sun, or what a beautiful morning. That much in 2-3 hours long walk. And Lao Tse said, don't bring this chatterbox again with you. He talks too much. And talks uselessly, because I have also eyes, I can see that the sun is being born and it is beautiful. What is the need to say it? Lao Tse lived in silence, always avoided to talk about the truth that he has attained, always rejected the idea that he should write it down for the generations to come. At the age of 90, he took leave of his disciples. He said goodbye to them and he said, now I am moving towards the hills, towards the Himalayas. I am going there to get ready to die. It is good to live with people. It is good to be in the world while you are living. But when one is getting nearer to death, it is good to move into total aloneness, so that you move towards the original source in your absolute purity and loneliness, uncontaminated by the world. The disciples felt very, very sad, but what they can do? They followed him for a few hundred miles, then by and by Lhasa persuaded them and they went back. Then alone he was crossing the boundary, and the guard on the boundary imprisoned him. The guard was also a disciple. And the guard said, unless you write a book, I am not going to allow you to move beyond the boundary. This much you must do for the humanity. Write a book. That is the debt you have to pay. Otherwise, I won't allow you. So for 3 days, Lhasa was imprisoned by his own disciples. It's beautiful. It is very loving. And he was forced. That's how this small book, the book of Lhasa, Tao Te King, was born. He had to write it because the disciple won't allow him. And he was the guard and he has the authority. And he can create trouble. So he had to write this book. In 3 days, he finished it. This is the first sentence of the book. The Tao that can be told of is not the absolute Tao. This is his first thing to say, that whatsoever can be said cannot be true. This is the introduction for the book. It simply makes you alert that now words will be following. Don't become a victim of the words. Remember the wordless. Remember that which cannot be communicated. Throw language, throw words. The Tao can be communicated, but it can be communicated from being to being. It can be communicated when you are with the Master, just with the Master, doing nothing, not even practicing anything, just being with the Master, it can be communicated. Why the truth cannot be said? What is the difficulty? The truth cannot be said for many reasons. The first and the most basic reason is, truth is always realized in silence. When your inner talk has stopped, then it is realized. And that which is realized in silence, how can you say it through sound? It is an experience. It is not a thought. If it was a thought, it can be expressed. There is no trouble in it. Howsoever complicated, complex a thought may be, a way can be found to express it. The most complex theory of Albert Einstein, the theory of relativity, can also be expressed in a symbol. There is no problem about it. The listener may not be able to understand it. That is not the point. But it can be expressed. It was said when Einstein was alive that only 12 persons, a dozen in the whole world, understood him, what he was saying. But even that is enough. Even if a single person can understand, it has been expressed. even if a single person cannot understand right now, maybe after many centuries there comes a person who understands it, then too it has been expressed. The very probability that somebody can understand it, and it has been expressed. But truth cannot be expressed, because the very reaching to it is through silence. You reach to it through no mind. The mind drops. How can you use something which has to drop as a necessary condition to reach to it? Mind cannot understand. Mind cannot realize. How can mind express? Remember it as a rule. If mind can attain, mind can express. If mind cannot attain to it, mind cannot express it. All language is futile. Truth cannot be expressed. Then what all the scriptures have been doing? Then what Lao Tse is doing? Then what Upanishads are doing? They all try to say something which cannot be said, in the hope that a desire may arise in you to know about it. Truth cannot be said, but in the very effort of saying it, a desire can arise in the hearer to know that which cannot be expressed. A thirst can be provoked. The thirst is there. It needs a little provocation. You are already thirsty. How it can be otherwise? You are not blissful. You are not ecstatic. You are thirsty. Your heart is a burning fire. You are seeking something which can quench the thirst. But not finding the water, not finding the source, by and by you have tried to suppress your thirst itself, because that is the only way. Otherwise it is too much. It will not allow you to live. Like Lao Tse knows well that truth cannot be said, but the very effort to say it will provoke, will bring the suppressed thirst in you to the surface. And once the thirst surfaces, a search, an inquiry starts. And he has moved you. The Tao that can be told of is not the absolute Tao. At the most it can be relative. For example, we can say to a blind man something about light, knowing well that it is impossible to communicate anything about light because he has no experience of it. But something can be said about light. Theories about light can be said. Even a blind man can become an expert about the theories of light. Of light he can become an expert. There is no problem about it. Only he will not understand what light is. He will understand what light consists of. He will understand the physics of light, the chemistry of light. He will understand the poetry of light, but he will not understand the facticity of light, what light is. The experience of light he will not understand. So all that is said to a blind man about light is only relative. It is something about light, not light itself. Light cannot be communicated. Something can be said about God, but God cannot be said. Something can be said about love, but love cannot be said. That something remains relative. It remains relative to the listener, his understanding, his intellectual grip, his training, his desire to understand. It depends, it is relative to the master, his way of expressing, his devices to communicate. But it remains relative. Relative to many things. But never it can become the absolute experience. This is the first reason the truth cannot be expressed. The second reason, it cannot be expressed because truth is an experience. No experience can be communicated. Leave truth aside. If you have never known love, somebody says something about love, you hear the word, but you miss the meaning. The word is in the dictionary. Even if you don't understand, you can look in the dictionary and you will know what it means. But the meaning is in you. Meaning comes through experience. If you have loved someone, then you know the meaning of the word love. The literal meaning is in the dictionary, in the language, in the grammar. But the experiential meaning, the existential meaning is in you. If you have known the experience, immediately the word love is no more empty. It contains something. If I say something, it is empty. Unless you bring your experience to it. When your experience comes to it, it becomes significant. Otherwise, it remains empty. Words and words and words. How truth can be expressed when you have not experienced it? Even in ordinary life, an unexperienced thing cannot be told. Only words will be conveyed. The container will reach you, but the content will be lost. An empty word will travel towards you. You will hear it. And you will think you understand it also because you know the literal meaning of it. But you will miss. The real authentic meaning comes through existential experience. You have to know it. There is no other way. There is no shortcut. Truth cannot be transferred. You cannot steal it. You cannot borrow it. You cannot purchase it. You cannot rob it. You cannot beg it. There is no way. Unless you have it, you cannot have it. So what can be done? The only way, and I emphasize it, the only way is to live with someone who has attained to the experience. just being in presence with someone who has attained to the experience, and something mysterious will be transferred to you, not by words. It is a jump of energy. Just as a flame can jump from a lit lamp to an unlit lamp, you bring the unlit lamp closer to the lit lamp, and the flame can jump. The same happens between a master and a disciple. Transmission beyond the scriptures. Transmission of energy, not of message. Transmission of life, not of words. The Tao that can be told of is not the absolute Tao. Remember this condition. Now enter the sutras. When the people of the earth all know beauty as beauty, there arises ugliness. When the people of the earth all know the good as good, there arises evil. Lao Tse is the absolute anarchist. He says, the moment you start thinking of order, disorder arises. The moment you think of God, devil is already present there. Because thinking can only be of the opposites. Thinking can be only of the duality. Thinking has a deep dichotomy in it. Thinking is schizophrenic. It is a spirit phenomena. That's why so much insistence that attain to a non-thinking state, because only then you will be one. Otherwise you will remain two, divided, split, schizophrenic. In the West, schizophrenia has become by and by more and more common. Because all the Western religions are deep down schizophrenic. They divide. They say God is good. Then where to put all evil? God is simply good. And He cannot be bad. And there is much that is bad in life. Where to put that badness? So a devil is created. The moment you create a God, immediately you create a devil. I must tell you, Lao Tse never talks about God. Never. Not even a single time he uses the word God. Because once you use the word God, the devil immediately enters with the same door. Open the door, they both come together. Thinking is always in opposites. When the people of the earth all know beauty as beauty, there arises the recognition of ugliness. The world will be beautiful when people have forgotten about beauty, because then there will be no ugliness. The world would be moral when people have completely forgotten the word moral, because then there will be no immorality. The world will be in order when there is nobody to enforce it. Nobody who is trying to create order. All those who try to create order are the mischief makers. They create disorder. but it is difficult to understand it. It is difficult because our whole mind have been trained by these schizophrenic thinkers. They say choose God and reject devil. Be good, don't be bad. And the more you try to be good, the more you feel inside you badness. Have you ever observed that saints who are trying to be absolutely virtuous are too much conscious of their sins? Then read Augustine's Confessions. Whole life trying to be a saint, then there arises the recognition of sin. The more you try to be a saint, the more you will feel you are encircled by sins. Try to be good and you will feel how bad you are. Try to be loving and you will come across hatred, anger, jealousy, possessiveness. Try to be beautiful and you will become more and more aware how ugly you are. Drop the dichotomy. Drop the schizophrenic attitude. Be simple. And when you are simple, you don't know who you are, beautiful or ugly. There is a Sufi story. A master was traveling and he came to an inn for an overnight stay with his disciples. The innkeeper told him that he has two wives. One is beautiful, another is ugly. But the problem is, said the innkeeper, that I love the ugly one and I hate the beautiful one. The master asked, what is the matter? What is the reason of it? The man said, the beautiful one is too much conscious of her beauty. That makes her ugly. When you are too much conscious of beauty, certainly you will become ugly. And the other is too much conscious of her ugliness, that makes her beautiful. The one who is beautiful thinks continuously she is beautiful. She has become arrogant, very proud. And how can you be beautiful with arrogance? Arrogance is ugliness. She has become very egoistic. And have you ever come across any ego which is beautiful? How the ego can be beautiful? The other, who is ugly and is conscious of her ugliness, has become humble, and humility has a beauty of its own. Humbleness without any pride, without any ego, creates beauty. So the man says, I am puzzled. I love the ugly one and I hate the beautiful one. And I am asking you to solve the puzzle. What is this matter? Why it is happening? The master called his all disciples and said, you also come, because this is really something to be understood. And he said exactly what Lao Tse is saying. To his disciples also he said, that don't be proud that you know. If you know that you know, you are ignorant. If you know that you don't know, you are wise. An absolutely simple man does not know. Either way, whether he knows or does not know, he lives completely unself-conscious. Now, I would like to prolong the story a little longer. It stops there. As Sufis have told it, it stops there. But I would like it to give it a deeper turn. I would like to tell you that after the master visited, I also visited the inn. After many years, of course. And the man, the innkeeper, came to me and said, "There is a puzzle. Once a Sufi master visited, and I had put this problem before him and he had solved it. But since then everything has turned. The ugly woman has become proud about her humbleness. And now I don't love her. Not only her body is ugly, now her being, whole being has become ugly. And the beautiful woman, knowing that the consciousness that she is beautiful is destroying her beauty, has dropped that consciousness. Now I love her. Not only her body is beautiful, her being has become beautiful. So he told me, "Now you tell me what is the matter." And I told him, "You please keep quiet. If I say something, then again the story will take a turn. Keep quiet." Self-consciousness is the disease. In fact, to be unself-conscious is to become realized. That's what enlightenment is all about. To be unself-conscious. But between the dichotomy, between the two, between the dilemma, how you can be unself-conscious? You always choose. You choose to be beautiful and ugliness becomes your shadow. You choose to be religious and irreligiousness becomes your shadow. You choose to be a saint and sin becomes your shadow. Choose and you will be in difficulty, because the very choice has divided life. Don't choose. Be choiceless. Let life flow. Sometimes it looks like God, sometimes it looks like devil. Both are beautiful. You don't choose. Don't try to be a saint, otherwise your saintliness will not be real saintliness. A pride in it will make everything ugly. So I say many times, sinners have reached the divine and saints have missed. Because sinners are always humble, thinking themselves sinners. They cannot claim. I will tell you another story. Once it happened, a saint knocked at the doors of the heaven, and at the same time, just by the side, a sinner knocked. And the saint knew the sinner very well. He lived in his neighborhood in the same town, and they had died on the same day. The doors opened. The gatekeeper, Saint Peter, didn't give even a look to the saint. He welcomed the sinner. The saint was offended. This was not expected, that a sinner should be welcomed. He asked Saint Peter, "What is the matter? You offend me. You insult me. Why I am not received?" And the sinner has been received with such welcome. Said Saint Peter, "That's why. You expect. He does not expect. He feels simply grateful that he has come to heaven. You feel that you have earned it. He feels the grace of God. You think it is because of your efforts you have achieved it. It is an achievement to you, and all achievements are of the ego. He is humble. He cannot believe that he has come to heaven. It is possible that a sinner can reach and a saint can miss. If the saint is too much filled with his saintliness, he will miss. Lao Tzu says, when the people of the earth all know beauty as beauty, there arises ugliness. When the people of the earth all know the good as good, there arises evil. Therefore, being and non-being interdepend in growth. Use both, don't choose. Life is an interdependence. Use sin also. It exists there for a purpose. Otherwise it won't exist. Use anger also. It exists there for a purpose. Otherwise it won't exist. Nothing exists without any purpose in life. How it can exist without any purpose? Life is not a chaos. It is a meaningful cosmos. Being and non-being interdependent growth. So be and not be together. Difficult and easy interdepend in completion. Long and short interdepend in contrast. High and low interdepend in position. Tones and voice interdepend in harmony. Front and behind interdepend in company. Lao Tzu is saying that opposites are not really opposites but complementaries. Don't divide them. Division is false. They are one, they are interdependent. How can love exist without hate? How can compassion exist without anger? How can life exist without death? How can happiness exist without unhappiness? How is heaven possible without hell? Hell is not against heaven. They are complementary. They exist together. In fact, they are two aspects of the same coin. Don't choose. Enjoy both. Allow both to be there. Create a harmony between the two. Don't choose. Then your life will become a symphony of the opposites. And that is the greatest life possible. It will be most ordinary in a way and most extraordinary in another way. That's why I say Buddha moves in the sky. He has no earth part in him. Lao says both earth and heaven together. Buddha, even in his perfection, seems to be incomplete. Lao says even in his incompletion is complete, perfect. You understand me? Try to dig it. Buddha in his perfection is still incomplete. The earth part is missing. He is unearthly like a ghost. The body part is missing. Unembodied. A tree without roots. You are roots. But only roots. It has not sprouted. The tree has not come to bloom. Buddha is only flowers and you are only roots. Lao says both. He may not look so perfect as Buddha, he cannot. Because the other is always there, how he can be perfect? But he is complete. He is total. He may not be perfect, but he is total. And these two words have to be remembered always. Don't try to be perfect. Try to be total. If you try to be perfect, you will follow Buddha, you will follow Mahavir, you will follow Jesus. If you try to be total, then only you can have the feeling of what it means to be near Lao Tse. What it means to follow Tao. Tao is totality. Totality is not perfect, it is always imperfect. Because it is always alive. Perfection is always dead. Anything that becomes perfect is dead. How can it live? How can it live when it has become perfect? It has no need to live. It has denied the other part. Life exists through the tension of the opposites, meeting of the opposites. If you deny the opposite, you can become perfect, but you will not be total. You will miss something. Howsoever beautiful Buddha is, he misses something. Lao Tse is not so beautiful. Not so perfect. A Buddha and Lao Tse are both standing before you. Lao Tse will look ordinary. Buddha is extraordinary, superb. But I tell you, thousands of Buddhas exist in Lao Tse. He is deeply rooted in the earth. He is rooted in the earth and he is high, standing in the sky. He is both heaven and earth, meeting of the opposites. There are three words to be remembered. One is dependence. Another is independence. Third is interdependence. Buddha is independent. You are dependent. A husband dependent on his wife. A father dependent on his son. Individual dependent on the society. Thousands of dependences. You are dependent. A Buddha stands like a peak, independent. He has cut all the ties with the world, with the wife, with the child, with the father. Everything he has cut. He has renounced all. A pillar of independence. You are part, Buddha is part, the other part. You may be ugly, he is beautiful. But his beauty exists only because of your ugliness. If you disappear, Buddha will disappear. He looks wise because of your stupidity. If you become wise, he will no more be wise. Laozi is the phenomena of interdependence. Because life is interdependent. You cannot be dependent. You cannot be interdependent. Both are extremes. Just in the middle, where life is a balance, it is an interdependence. Everything exists with everything else. Everything is interconnected. You hurt a flower and you hurt a star. Everything is interconnected. Nothing exists like an island. If you try to exist like an island, it is possible. But it will be an unearthly phenomenon. Almost a myth. A dream. Laozi believes in interdependence. He says, take everything as it is, don't choose. Seems to be simple and yet the most difficult. Because the mind always wants to choose. Mind lives through choice. If you don't choose, mind drops. This is the way of Laozi. How to drop the mind, don't choose. That's why he never prescribes any meditation. Because then there is no need for any meditation. Don't choose. Live life as it comes. Float. Don't make any effort to reach somewhere. Don't move towards a goal. Enjoy the moment in its totality. And don't be bothered by the future or the past. Then a symphony arises within your soul. The lowest and the highest meet in you. And then you have a richness. If you are only the highest, you are poor. Because you are like a hill which has no valleys. It is a poor hill. Valleys give depth and valleys give mystery to it. In valleys abides the very poetry. The peak is plain, arithmetical. It is plain. In the valley move the shadows, the mystery. Without a valley, a peak is poor. And without a peak, a valley is poor. Because then there is only darkness. The sun never visits it. Damp and gloomy and sad. The richest possibility is to be a peak and the valley together. Somewhere Nietzsche says, and Nietzsche has one of the most penetrating minds that has ever been possessed by any human being. Because of that penetration, he became mad. It was too much. The mind was too much. He couldn't contain it. He says that a tree that wants to reach to the sky has to go to the deepest earth. The roots should have to go to the very hell deep down. Only then the branches, the peak can reach to the heaven. The tree will have to touch both the hell and heaven, the height and depth both. And the same is true for the being of man. You should have somehow to meet the devil and the divine both in your innermost core of being. Don't be afraid of the devil, otherwise your God will be a poorer God. A Christian or Jewish God is very poor. The Christian or Jewish or Mohammedan God has no salt in it, tasteless. Because the salt has been thrown away, the salt has become the devil. They have to become one. A organic unity exists in existence between the opposites, being and non-being, difficult and easy, long and short, high and low, tones and voice interdepend in harmony, front and behind interdepend in company. Therefore, the sage manages affairs without action. This is what Lao Tse calls Wei Wei. The sage manages affairs without action. Three are the possibilities. One, be in action and forget inaction. You will be a worldly man. The second possibility, drop action, move to the Himalayas, remain inactive. You will be a otherworldly man. The third possibility, live in the market, but don't allow the market to live in you. Act without being active. Move, remain unmoving inside. I am talking to you, and there is silence inside me. I am talking and not talking together. Move and don't move. Act and don't act. If inaction and action can meet, then the harmony arises. Then you become a beautiful phenomenon. Not beautiful against ugliness, but beautiful which comprehends ugliness also. Go to a rose bush, see the flowers and the thorns. Those thorns are not against the flower, they protect it. They are guards around the flower. Security, safety measures. In a really beautiful person, in a really harmonious person, nothing is rejected. Rejection is against existence. Everything should be absorbed. That's the art. If you reject, that shows you are no artist. Everything should be absorbed, used. If there is a rock on the way, don't try to reject it. Use it as a stepping stone. Therefore, the sage manages affairs without action. He does not escape to the Himalayas. He remains in the world. He manages affairs, but without any action. He is not active inside. Action remains on the outside. On the center, he remains inactive. That is what Lao Tzu calls Wei. Finding the center of the cyclone. The cyclone is on the outside, but in the center nothing moves, nothing stirs. Preaches the doctrine without words. Here I am preaching to you doctrine without words. You will say, I am using words. Yes, I am preaching without words, because deep inside me no word arises. It is for you, not for me. The word is for you. It is not for me. I use it. I am not used by it. It does not fill me. The moment I am not talking to you, I am not talking at all. I never talk to myself. There is no inner talk. When I am not talking, I am silent. When I am talking, the silence is not disturbed. The silence remains untouched. Preaches the doctrine without words, all things take their rise, but he does not turn away from them. He never escapes. He never rejects. He never renounces. And that is the meaning of Maya Sannyas. The word sannyas means renunciation. And I don't preach renunciation. Then why I call you sannyasins? I call you in a Laosian sense. Renounce and yet don't renounce. Remain in the world, but yet out of it. This is the meeting of the opposites. So I don't tell you to move, to drop, to leave your families. There is no need. You be there. You be totally there. But deep down, something remains above, transcendental. Don't forget that. When you are with your wife, be with your wife and also be with you. That's the point. If you forget yourself and you are just with the wife, you are a worldly man. Then, sooner or later, you will escape. Because that will create so much misery in life. Then you would like to leave and renounce and go to the hills. Both are extremes. And the truth is never on the extreme. The truth comprehends the extremes. It is in both and in neither. All things take their rise, but he does not turn away from them. He gives them life, but does not take possession of them. Love your children, but don't possess them. Love your wife and your husband, but don't possess them. The moment you possess, you don't know. Deep down you have been possessed. The moment you possess, you have been possessed. The possessor is the possessed. Don't possess, because the possession tries to destroy the center of the other, and the other won't allow you. And if you destroy the center of the other in the very first, your own center will be destroyed. Then there will be only cyclone and no center. be in the world and yet not in it. Something deep in you transcends, remains floating in the sky. Roots in the earth, branches in the sky. He gives them life but does not take possession of them. He acts but does not appropriate, accomplices but claims no credit. He simply lives as part of the whole. How can he claim any credit? He simply lives as a part of this organic unity, this existence, this thusness. He is part of it. How can he claim? How can a wave claim anything? The wave is just a part of the ocean. He acts but does not appropriate, accomplices but claims no credit. It is because he lays claim to no credit that the credit cannot be taken away from him. This is the absurd logic of Laos. He is absolutely logical, but he has a logic of his own. He says, it is because he lays claim to no credit that the credit cannot be taken away from him. If you claim, the claim can be disproved. If you don't claim, how the claim, which has not been claimed at all, can be disproved? If you try to be somebody in the world, maybe it can be proved that you are nobody. It will be proved, because everybody is trying to be somebody and everybody is a competitor in that claim. But if you don't claim, you remain a nobody. How can this be disproved? In your nobodiness, you become somebody, and nobody can disprove it, and nobody can compete it. If you try to be victorious, you will be defeated. Ask the Alexanders and the Napoleons and the Hitlers. If you try to be victorious, you will be defeated. Says Lao Tse, don't try to be victorious. Nobody can defeat you. A very subtle logic, the logic of life itself. Don't claim, and your claim is absolutely fulfilled. Don't try to be victorious, and your victory is absolute. Don't try. Just be. And all that you can try will come to you by itself, on its own accord. A man who has not asked for anything, who has not been trying to be successful in any way, who has not striving for any ambition to be fulfilled, suddenly finds that all is fulfilled. Life itself comes to him to share its secrets, to share its riches. Because a man who remains without claim becomes emptiness. In that emptiness, life goes on pouring its secrets and riches. Life abhors vacuum. If you become empty, everything will come on its own accord. Trying, you will fail. Non-trying, success is absolutely certain. I am not saying that if you want to be successful, don't try. No, I am not saying that. It is not a result, it is a consequence. And you have to understand the difference between a result and a consequence. When you listen to Lao Tse to me, of course you understand the logic. That if you try to be victorious, you will be defeated because there are millions of competitors. How can you succeed in this competitive world? Nobody ever succeeds. Everybody fails. And everybody fails absolutely. There is no exception. And then Lao Tse says that if you don't try to succeed, you will succeed. Your mind becomes greedy and your mind says, that's right, so this is the way to succeed. So I will not claim, I will not be ambitious, so that my ambitions should be fulfilled. Now, this is asking for a result. You remain the same. You have missed Lao Tse completely. Lao Tse is saying that if really you remain without any claim, without asking for any credit, fame, name, success, ambition, then as a consequence, success is there. Victory is there. The whole existence pours down into your emptiness. You are fulfilled. This is a consequence, not a result. A result is when you desire it. Consequence is when you were not even thinking about it. No desire. Not thinking about it. It happens as part of the inner law of existence. That law is called Tao. It is because he lays claim to no credit that the credit cannot be taken away from him. Understand Lao Tse and understand your inner greed. Because the greed can say, it happens every day, almost every day. People come to me and I tell them, you meditate, but you don't ask for results. They say, if we don't ask for results, will they happen? I say, yes, they will happen, but don't ask for them. So they say, okay. Then after a few days they come. And they say, we have been waiting and they have not happened up to now. You missed the point. You cannot wait. You can wait for a result, you cannot wait for a consequence. Consequence has nothing to do with you or your waiting. It is part of the innermost law. It happens by its own accord. You are not needed even to wait, because even in the waiting, the desire. And if the desire is there, the consequence will never happen. Don't desire, and it happens. Don't ask, and it is given. Jesus says, ask and it shall be given. Knock and the door shall be opened. Lao Tse says, ask not and it shall be given. Knock not and the door has always remained open. Just look. And I say to you, Lao Tse goes the deepest. Nobody has ever gone. Lao Tse is the greatest key. If you understand him, he is the master key. You can open all the locks. that exist in life and existence. Try to understand him. And it will be easy for you if you don't ask for any results out of the understanding. Just enjoy the understanding. Just enjoy the fact that you are on a journey with this old guy. This old guy is beautiful, not against ugliness. This old guy is wise, not against stupidity. This old guy is enlightened, not against unenlightened persons. This old guy is total. You exist in him, and Buddha also. He is both. And if you can understand him, nothing is left to be understood. You can forget Mahaviras, Buddhas, Krishnas. Lao Tse alone is enough. He is the master key. Enough for today.